His skin is white just like a ghost. Thick Irish roots and his blonde hair. And he sounds like a Chicago super fan. A music nerd with a collection of CDs from here to there. Yes, Andy Dare is in Chicago, interviewing and barbecuing. It's the Andy Dare Show. It's the Andy Dare Show.
Welcome to the Andy Dare Show. I'm your humble host, Andy, and yeah, we are back with a brand new season of shows. This is episode 133. I'm joined by an awesome guy, Chris Conley. He is a Chicago rock legend, born in Scotland, came over here, really helped completely establish industrial music, rock and roll music in the city of Chicago in the 80s and 90s and in the present day. And yeah, he's been in many, many bands, too many to mention right now, but Revolting Cocks, Ministry, Cocksure, Sons of the Silent Age, whole bunch of good stuff. He's got a brand new self-titled solo album coming out. And yeah, it was a pleasure to talk to him. I actually got the chance to interview him back in 2011 it was an interview with the Flea Cast. And yeah, we thought we'd do a quick little phoner. But yeah, he invited us into Reckless Records, where he is a manager at, which is a great store, by the way. And yeah, took us back to the office. We got to pretty much talk about his whole story. And yeah, we got to be joined by Matt and Emily from the band Implodes. So yeah, that's a memory I'll never forget. Unfortunately, I can't find that interview anywhere. I've been talking to the guys from the Flea Cast. Can't seem to find it. I don't know if the computer was fried. Yeah, we discuss it in the interview. It's a great interview. Want to thank Chris for taking the time out of his day. And yeah, talking about his story. And if you want to learn more about Chris, it's an awesome story. Check out chrisconnelly.com. That's two N's and L, and two N's and L's in the last name Connelly. So chrisconnelly.com for all the info. Info about his David Bowie cover act, Sons of the Silent Age. Info about his brand new self-titled solo album coming out soon. And also info about his autobiography, which is awesome. If you haven't read it, there's a brand new second pressing available now. And it's called Concrete Bulletproof, Invisible and Fried, My Life as a Revolting Cock. And you can find it at Reckless Records. I believe there's autographed copies there. And obviously at chrisconnelly.com. In other news, yeah, my show just celebrated its fourth anniversary. Started this whole thing off January 2011. Just want to thank the listeners and all the sponsors for staying on board. Truly a milestone. I always try to start something. I do it for a little while and then I give up on it. So it means a lot just to myself that I was able to endure this long. And I don't see any quit in me anytime soon. So hopefully this will go 50 years. And yeah, so 4 years down. And I want to thank the guys who help out with Dare Network, my little podcast network that I started in 2013. I got Jay Porks out in Staten Island. He gives you a weekly show from Staten Island. I believe every Tuesday night you get the Jay Porks Experience. He goes to concerts. He's a waiter. He's got a lot of funny stuff to talk about. He's tons of music knowledge. This kid is very talented. I found a real cool guy with Jay Porks. Want to thank Jay. Follow him at Jay Porks. And then every Thursday, we got Tyler Kale, opposite end of the spectrum. He's in Hollywood, California. He works at a modeling agency or a talent agency, and tons of sports knowledge out of this guy and tons of humor as well. I like, if you're going to be part of the Dare Network, you got to be funny no matter what you're covering. And these guys are smart. They're with it. They're cool. Check it out. Follow him on Twitter at Tyler Kale. That's K-A-H-L. And also on Instagram, he's got a bunch of funny things going on. His major expertise is celebrity doppelgangers. So it sounds weird, but he finds two pictures of two completely different people. He puts them right next to each other, and somehow they're making the same face, or they look alike. And yeah, it's a weird talent, but I thought it would be something cool to include on the network. And yes, we have just announced our brand new fanzine. Created here at the Honeycomb Hideout. That's what I call my studio here in Westmont, Illinois. And if you want to receive the Honeycomb, it's completely free. All you got to do is call the show, Leave a voicemail. That's 630-341-3022. Leave a voicemail with your name and mailing address. And yeah, it's a monthly issue, just featuring me, Jay Porks, Tyler Kale, and this month we got Dan Korhonen also contributing. You know, it's artwork, it's articles, we're going to have poetry on there, a whole bunch of different stuff. I just thought it's a nice thing in this flimsy digital age we live in, where everything's here today, gone tomorrow. Why don't we give the people something that they can hold on to, something to file away, check out in 10 years, and remember what they were up to when they were reading this issue of The Honeycomb. Something tangible. And yeah, I just thought it was something different in 2015 to do my own little punk zine. And hopefully it'll be at Reckless Records soon. Right now you can also find it at Record Utopia, my awesome sponsor out here in Westmont, Illinois. And as I said, if you want to join the mailing list, you can also email me at andrewmartindarer@gmail.com or call the show. Once again, 630-341-3022. Leave a voicemail with your name and mailing address. All right, that about wraps it up for my little spiel. I'm going to be right back, and I'm going to read you my brand new Empty Lighthouse article. It's a review for the brand new Cracker album. We'll be right back after this.
Yo, Jay Porks here from the Jay Porks Experience. Just here to remind you to keep it locked to the Andy Deer Show and all the other programming here on the fabulous Deer Network here in 2014. Jay Porks, Tyler Kale, Andy Deer.
And we're back. And first off, just want to say thank you to EmptyLighthouse.com for featuring my articles for the past year. It's a cool website. Check them out. I just do the music reviews, but it covers pretty much every facet of pop culture. Check them out at EmptyLighthouse.com. And also, I'd like to say sorry to the guys in Cracker and David Lowry for sending out this review with the wrong album title. Somehow I wrote in my notes that the album was called From Berkeley to Bakersfield. And I did the whole review. I kept going back to that and looking at that, and I kept putting that in. It was in my brain as From Berkeley to Bakersfield. Then I even published the thing. Everything went okay. And realized that it's just called Berkeley to Bakersfield. And I'm really sorry about that. I switched it all up, completely edited it up. So now it is looking as it's supposed to. And yeah, I'll just read a little short excerpt from it. Check it out at EmptyLighthouse.com. And also I've got a link up at AndyDare.com too. Here it is. Published 18th of January, 2015. Album review, Cracker, Berkeley to Bakersfield by Andy Dare. Along with Beck's Loser, Cracker's Low hit at the perfect time when it was vogue to be a self-loathing artist. The band was pretty much the exact polar opposite of late 80s hair metal, where bands were full of egomaniacs and the term rock god was often bandied about. However, Cracker weren't grunge also-rans. Turns out that their loud melodic blend of Americana and garage rock just happened to fit in nicely with the MTV-promoted grunge era. When Lowe finally took Cracker into the upper stratosphere of success, it had actually been a decade-plus story of hardship and heartbreak. Singer-songwriter David Lowry started Camper Van Beethoven 1983 as an eclectic collective of musical misfits. Their sound simply couldn't be described. They took elements of folk, garage rock, ska, world music, and soul and put it into a Cuisinart, and the result was delicious. They couldn't have been more removed from what was being played on MTV, but once the alternative rock movement gained momentum, they were signed to Virgin and even had a moderate hit with their cover of Pictures of Matchstick Men in 1989. CVB promptly split up after that first taste of success, certainly at the behest of anyone at the record label. However, Lowry had another trick up his sleeve. He started writing music with a childhood friend, Johnny Hickman, streamlined that eclectic sound to better fit the 90s, and released the self-titled Cracker album in 1992. The first track was titled Teen Angst and perfectly captured the alt-rock Generation X zeitgeist. 1 year later, and Cracker was a household name. All right, to read the full review, check out EmptyLighthouse.com or AndyDare.com. Just want to thank those guys for the support. Want to thank you guys for listening. Want to thank Chris Conley for being my guest this week. And without further ado, here is my episode 133, Curious Minds, with special guest Chris Conley. 133. I am joined by a Chicago rock icon, Chris Connolly. How you doing, buddy?
I'm fine, thank you very much. How are you?
I'm doing well, yes.
Nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's nice to talk again. I guess it was back in 2011, me and my buddy from the Fleetcast, we took a recorder and went to Reckless and did a little interview with you and Matt and Emily from Implodes. Thank you so much for opening up the doors to the office and just having a chat with us. That was cool.
My pleasure.
Yeah, I mean, we just talked about your whole career, kind of, but I think that interview has actually been lost in the ethers, which I guess 2011, his laptop froze or something like that. Nowadays, I put everything on YouTube. I put everything, so even if the computer breaks, it's out there somewhere. So,
Right. Yeah,
this won't be going into the ethers anytime soon. You've been being quite busy with your Bowie band, Sons of the Silent Age. How's that going for you?
It's going great. We all love doing it. It's I don't know how much you want to know about that, but we started it about 2 years ago, and we started it to myself and Matt Walker started it mostly, well, 100% because we just loved that music and wanted to play it.
Sure.
For fun, you know, which is the reason we still have it. I mean, it's really fun. It's a challenge. There's a lot of material to choose from, and it pushes some boundaries with us as musicians. So, you know, that's what it's all about, you know?
Yeah, I believe I was at the first ever Chicago show at the Metro.
Yeah.
Probably about 2 years ago this month,
uh-huh.
I think. And, Shirley Manson of Garbage, I guess an old school friend of yours, came out and did a couple songs. That was one of the best versions of Heroes I've ever, if not, I've never seen Bowie live, so that was the best version of Heroes I'd ever seen. It was pretty mind-blowing.
Thank you.
How long, how did you meet Shirley, and you said it's been a long time you've been friends, right?
Yeah, we've been friends for 30 years. I met her when I was, I think she was either, she was probably 18, I was probably 19, but we were both very much part of the Edinburgh music scene, and we met each other because we were both to be runway models in a fashion show.
Oh, really? Okay.
And we became fast friends at that time, like immediately, and we've been that way ever since.
So this is taking it all the way back to early 80s, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
This is before you came to the States, before Ministry, before all that stuff, right?
Before the internet, before digital cameras.
Before the Feeney tribe, too, yeah?
No. The Feeney tribe was, that was the band I started when I was in secondary school in Edinburgh. I mean, that started in 1980, you know. That's 35 years old now. Since I started that, that will always be my first love.
So was that village growing up, is it like a small enough scene where everybody kind of knew each other, knew what was going on, what bands were cool and stuff? Is that, was it kind of a small town or?
Edinburgh is a small town, but it's a very big town as well. I mean, it's the capital city of Edinburgh. But yes, everybody knew each other's business, and I don't mean that in a good way at all. It was very... it was a very bitchy and very incestuous scene. The Finney tribe were always outsiders.
Sure.
And Shirley had a band called Goodbye Mr. McKenzie, who we were friends with, but they were very different from us. And she never spoke nicely about her band to me.
Never.
We're rubbish. Your band's much better than mine. But, there were other. There was a lot of backstabbing in Edinburgh between the bands. I'm sure it's the same these days. I'm just too old to do it.
Is it the type of thing where you guys would all backstab each other and try to get people to each other's shows, but then at the end of the night you'd be having a pint and enjoying each other's company? Or was it all just...
No, we're far too snobby for that. We
nice.
Elitist little snobs. Make no doubt about it. We were the worst. I mean, not me personally, just everybody in the band in Edinburgh was the worst.
Sure.
You know, and that's that.
Nice, but going back to the Bowie tribute band, how about your first memory listening to a Bowie song? What era was it?
Starman.
Nice.
Ziggy Stardust. I remember hearing it first on a radio. Someone was playing a radio in a park. It was summer, and I was in Glasgow where my grandmother and grandfather lived. And I really loved the song, but I remember seeing him on Top of the Pops as well, doing it, and it was, I was really too young to understand it, but I really loved that song, you know.
Just as an
seven or eight.
Just as an image of a man, it must have just caught your fancy and just saying, what am I seeing here? This is something we weren't seeing in the 60s. This is a complete new glam look going on. And then, obviously, the chameleon of music, pretty much switching up styles every couple years, releasing multiple albums every year. How about a favorite era of all the eras that he's had? Should I assume it's the Berlin era, since you guys are called Sons of the Silent Age?
My favorite record is Station to Station.
Okay, nice.
So there you go. That's kind of like a transitional record between the Plastic Soul period of Young Americans and returning to Europe. I think that album pretty much has everything that I need in terms of imagery and intrigue in a David Bowie record.
And he gets it all done within six songs, right? Yeah.
Precisely, and economy as well, you know?
It's beautiful. Were you always a fan? Did you ever fall off of his music in the 80s when a lot of bands were just having trouble, you know, staying cutting edge, and with the MTV coming out, it was, should I keep going with what I want to do, or should I try to, you know, find a new audience with the kids watching MTV? Did you ever fall off of Bowie's music?
I did. Because, I mean, I always loved the records that went up to that period, but I didn't like the album last. I thought it was weak, and I thought, you know, compared to, and at that time I was definitely not a person who listened to pop music.
Sure.
That was, you know, not in my purview. You know, in hindsight, I said Dance is not, it's not as strong a pop record as many pop records were out at that time.
Sure.
You know, there's some songs that are just, you know, they're just not that great, but the song Let's Dance I think is fantastic, but.
Nice.
And there's definitely some moments on that record, but that's when I, you know, compared to Scary Monsters, it just wasn't doing it for me. And I mean, I don't think it was maybe doing it for him either, you know, but he sold tons of records and that's great.
Exactly. And then he would pull through, and then in the 90s, it almost seemed like he's catching up to something that, you know, about the industrial music movement, kind of, you know, with Trent Reznor, the early Ministry sounds and stuff with his, you know, Earthling album and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it was kind of cool that he kind of caught up to your guys' scene a little bit. But as you said, in the 80s, pop was not anything you were interested in. And,
no.
If you read your book, Concrete Bulletproof, Invisible, and Fried, My Life as a Revolting Cock, which, you just did a second pressing of, right?
Yeah.
You just go into vivid detail about the entire decade of the 80s, what you went through, all these turbulent times, but beautiful times as well. For the new edition, for my listeners, what can they expect if they've already read the first edition?
Well, the new edition is the same as the old edition, except it has color photographs.
Nice.
And it has a new foreword and a new afterword. So, there's also an audio version, which I highly recommend, and I read that.
Nice, that's awesome. I really enjoyed the book. I actually bought multiple copies back when I did that interview
with you,
and gave it as a wedding present to my cousin. She loved it. it was just a great read. Your old bandmate Al Jorgensen also released a book last year, kind of threw you under the bus, but on your book, you've always stayed kind of classy with it. You guys were not really ever that close, but you took the high road with your book, and he took the low road. And but those records that you did with Ministry, out of those, what is it, the three albums you did?
Yeah.
Three albums. How about, like, your favorite track that kind of that you're still proud of to this day?
Well, I, you know, the one I had the most to do with was The Mind is a Terrible Thing to Taint.
Nice.
And I think that, you know, the song So What, I'm still very proud of. I think that's a good song. But there's a lot of lyrics on that record I'm proud of, though Al tried to maintain 20 years later that I didn't write any of that. But
nice.
What are you going to do?
But that's cool. I was just thinking about how So What, you guys were playing around with hip-hop rhythms, you know, almost spitting lyrics. You guys were right in the middle point of his early, you know, kind of Euro-pop, almost new romantic sound. And what he was doing in the 90s and 2010s, which for me is just like a machine gun thrash metal assault that doesn't have that personality of those albums that you worked on, where you guys were just throwing everything into a Cuisinart and just throw a little industrial, little hard rock, a little bit of hip-hop, all this stuff, mixing it up beautifully. And I think, so that I think is Ministry's best period, you know.
Well, yeah, there wasn't any rules at that point, you know what I'm saying? I mean, we didn't have an agenda. Certainly with The Mind is a Terrible Thing to Taste, we had not a clue what we were going to do when we came into the studio. Not a clue. And that's why it's eclectic like that. And I've said this before, I don't think that's necessarily a great thing. I mean, there was a lack of focus, but it worked out in the end. I think that the band on that record, a great band, it's the best lineup that he ever had.
Sure.
Because we were curious and we were interested and we had technology and we had curious minds and we wanted to do something that we always wanted to do something that was groundbreaking, but then that stopped, you know.
Sure.
And it wasn't groundbreaking. When something stops being groundbreaking, I walk away.
I got you.
Because it's fine to not be groundbreaking for other people, but I have to be groundbreaking all the time.
Yeah, then
even if it's only in my own living room, I have to think I'm breaking ground somewhere.
Yeah, then he put out the Filth Pig album, and it was just dirges, and it was just all heroin music, and it was just, I don't know, it lost that fun that you guys were having fun with in 89, 90, 91, and those
exactly.
Those years.
It was
and,
fun.
Yeah.
You're right. It was a lot of fun, and there was a lot of nice surprises. It was great working with Bill Reifen and Paul Barker.
Nice.
You know, always up for a laugh. There was no substances in that relationship. You know, it was all about curiosity and just exploring sound, really.
That's beautiful. And then, after you'd split ways with them, I've always wanted to ask you about this at the record store, but I don't want to bug you. Murder, Inc., the time you got to front Killing Joke. I tell people about that all the time. They're like, you're just making that up. I'm like, go look it up on allmusic.com. He fronted Killing Joke. And then to make it even more near and dear to my heart, Steve Albini recorded it. Love that album. Love that reissue that you guys put out. How was that recording that one?
That was really great. I mean, it was still everything I did sort of from the period of 1987 to 1993 was always turbulent. There was always something awful going on in my life or surrounding the band, you know?
Sure.
But we recorded this at a studio which is in Cannon Falls, Minnesota, where Nevermind was, not Nevermind, I think In Utero was recorded there.
Sure, Packet.
And so we in the middle of the countryside, and there was nothing to disturb us. There was no distractions. There was no distractions. We had to have someone come to the studio every day with our supply of beer
nice.
And pot or whatever it is we
sure.
were doing. I don't remember. The guys worked on it during the day. I didn't really work with them lyrically on the day. I would pop in and out, and I would take my, there was a bicycle, but I'd take my notebook and I'd cycle off and I'd write lyrics, and then I would come back at night and I'd record just me and Steve alone. And it was really good fun recording with Steve because he kept making me try these mad things, like, well, we'll do this vocal on your back. We had this book of the Abbey Road Beatles recording sessions, and John Lennon used to try all these crazy things, like recording upside down and stuff like
really?
That.
Really? Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So Steve made me do all this kind of stuff. Like, I remember one night he got a board and put it on some bricks, and it was wobbly, and he made me sing the vocal, the lead vocal to, I can't remember what song, Red Black maybe, and he had me jump up and down on this wooden board on top of bricks, which just went thump, thump, thump the whole time.
Wow.
To get a sort of violence into the sound.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and you had two drums, two amazing drummers, Martin Atkins and Paul Ferguson, playing together at the same time. That was a first, and it was really awesome. I wish that band had continued, but I can't remember why it didn't.
Yeah, it's what it, that was 93, you're saying?
No, that was 1991.
Oh, okay.
Sure. That was right before the second Pigface tour. It was between the first Pigface tour and the second Pigface tour. I was really busy back then.
And you were obviously aware who Val Beany was because of the Serpent Rosa and stuff and Big Black.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, these bands were huge in Britain before I came to the States. Big Black and Rape Man. Very, very, very hip bands.
That's weird. I wouldn't think of that. I would have thought them as more of a regional act, but they were already making a buzz across the pond, huh?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, they were quite a sensation in the UK. I mean, on an independent label,
sure.
You know,
in the Melody Maker and stuff like that. Or, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was the level of, you know, they were about the same as Sonic Youth and the Swans, who like, you know, the crown princes of music at that time in the UK.
Yeah, we asked him for an interview about 3 years ago, and everybody's like, no way in hell you'll get an interview with him. I was picturing him being the Darth Vader of indie rock, you know, with his rules and his regulations. And yeah, and then he goes, no, get over here. Just we'll do it. I was like, we'll do a phoner? No, get in the electrical audio. We'll do this in person. We brought our Tascam 4-track. He laughed and thought that was funny. He couldn't have been more of a funny, down-to-earth guy just eating animal crackers and answering our questions. And then
no, he's a nice guy. He gets a bad reputation, but I've always got along. He's got a very acerbic wit, for sure. But who doesn't love that?
And then I loved when I was hearing about Sonic Highways, the big Foo Fighters documentary series, and they said, oh, yeah, Steve Albini gets a little shine in the Chicago episode. And then I go, oh, they'll give him about 25 seconds, 30 seconds. He got like 15 minutes of that thing, and I'm sure electrical audio's phone's been ringing. I'm sure he's been getting some business off of people that have just seen that and want a piece of Chicago history by recording with him and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's really cool, though. I heard that you were just finishing up a new album.
Yeah, it is done. It took a long time. But it's done, and it's all mastered and ready to go.
Nice. You work with Matt Walker again, right?
I do.
Nice.
He produced it, and you know we started it a while back, but you know he's busy too. He was on tour for a lot of the year with Morrissey, and but he mixed the record on the road, like on the bus and in hotel rooms. And
really? Huh.
Yeah, he finished the record in Serbia.
Nice. Not a lot of records been finished in Serbia, but that's pretty cool.
Do you have I'm
a
title? Very proud that mine has.
do you have a working title, or do you have a title, or what's...
It's self-titled. It's just
really?
Called Chris Connolly. Yeah.
That's awesome. When can we expect that to be released?
April.
April, awesome. What label are we talking?
Cleopatra.
Cleopatra. Where are they out of?
They're out of LA.
Okay, cool. And what kind of styles are we going to be looking for on this one?
It's very, how to describe? I think it's very cinematic sounding. I think it's very widescreen sounding. You know, it's very noirish.
Nice.
Yeah, there's also a lot of guest vocalists on it. There's five different female vocalists who sing with me on it. Very eclectic. So there's a few duets on there, you know.
Oh, that's awesome. Is Shirley on there or no?
Shelley's not on there. She couldn't do it, unfortunately. Not because she didn't want to. She just couldn't. But gotcha. There are two other Scottish singers on there. I don't know if you remember Leslie Rankin, who's Ruby.
Ruby. Okay, yes. I do remember that. Okay, awesome.
Okay, so she's on it, and also an actress singer called Rebecca Pigeon.
Nice.
Who's from Edinburgh. She's on it as well.
Really cool. Well, I want to let you go. I just got one more question. Just thanks for taking the time out. Reckless Records, they can find you. You're a manager at Reckless Records. I love the place. I probably spend over $10,000 there. And really cool. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just really cool seeing the when I go in there and it's just packed with younger people. They're all back into vinyl, which I would never have expected that 15 years ago. But yes, I go in there quite a bit. It's always packed. I love Record Store Day. That's just a madhouse. I was there for Kim and Kelly Deal last year, just you know, selling vinyl hand over fist, and it's a great thing to see. Reckless Records, probably my favorite record store in the Chicago area.
Thank you.
Yeah, check it out. You've got autographed copies of your book there. Go check it out.
I do.
And a new album out in April, self-titled
in
Chris
April.
Connolly. Any last words, Chris?
No, thank you for talking to me. It was a real pleasure.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Say hi the next time you come through, all right?
Oh, I will definitely, Chris. Thanks for taking time out. And on behalf of Chris Connolly, this is Andy signing off for the Andy Derer Show. This episode of the Andy Derer Show is brought to you in part by Uncle Bub's award-winning barbecue in Westmont, Illinois. Family-owned and operated since 1997, Uncle Bub's is the real deal barbecue. A family-friendly restaurant open 7 days a week. Also, it's a full-service catering company doing weddings, pig roasts, luaus, grill packages, you name it. They have a friendly, helpful staff that will make sure that your party goes off without a hitch. Call them at 630-493-9000. Visit them at 132 South Cass Avenue in Westmount, Illinois, and UncleBubs.com. Hey man, I know you like grilling. I know you like getting those dark grill marks on your burgers, fish, chicken. And I know you don't want to just dry your meat out like you're cooking with a hairdryer. Why not get the Man Grate and click through the AndyDareShow.com's banner so we can keep the lights on here at Honeycomb Hideout Studios in gorgeous Westmont, Illinois. The Man Grate. This episode of the Andy Derer Show is brought to you in part by Record Utopia, a music lover's dream with thousands of vinyl records, musical instruments, and sound gear. They buy, sell, and trade. Give them a call at 630-963-1957. Visit them in Westmont, Illinois at 309 West Ogden Avenue, on the web at recordutopia.com. It's always a good, relaxed atmosphere. Check them out, Record Utopia. Be sure to follow Andy on Twitter, that's at Andy Derer, and like our show on Facebook, that's facebook.com/TheAndyDererShow. Videos at youtube.com/AndrewMartinDerer, and we're on iTunes, just search The Andy Derer Show, please leave a review. Thanks so much to our wonderful sponsors, Uncle Bub's award-winning barbecue, Record Utopia, The Man Grate, and Amazon.com. Theme song courtesy of Rich Banks Music. Thank you so much for checking out The Andy Derer Show. TheAndyDareShow.com.